Welcome to Expounded Universe, Season 2, Episode 11, Unlimited Salad and Dog Sticks, with your hosts, Jeff and John. The book, The Crystal Star by Vonda McIntyre. The year, 1994. Chapter 11, let's go.
This would be great if Danzig was in charge of the Empire Reborn.
I got a yep now for you.
He's a big pile of dicks covered in gold.
The Patriarch.
Set my jackhammer to kill.
Welcome back to Expounded Universe, the discussion podcast where we talk about Expanded Universe Star Wars books. But was it too much? Did I miss
no.
one?
You were good.
Normally you always point out that I do something wrong in these intros.
Well, you see, this time around, you were very calm, and you went about it instead of like trying to just run right through it, just jam your dick through that intro and get all up in it.
I'm not usually trying
to. You took your time. You romanced it.
I did the intro gently.
Yeah. You really, really took your good sweet time. You put some rose petals down. You put on some music.
A little Barry White.
Yeah, it was good.
Okay, well, I'm glad to hear that. This is Chapter 11 of Vonda McIntyre's The Crystal Star.
And that's out of 13.
Yeah, we're
real close.
We're on our way down the slide, which is remarkable given that this entire chapter is wheel spinning again.
Oh my God. I am amazed at the amount of page space that can be lent over in this book to. And then people were like, "Nah, I'm grumpy. Time to go to a place." And like, that's all that happens.
That pretty much is all that happens. For a lot of this book, there's just nothing happening. So, okay, this chapter opens. And we might as well, once again, like we like to do, talk about where we left our heroes.
Yeah.
So we left our heroes on the world craft, the Hethrir's secret world craft.
I don't know if I would call them our heroes.
We left the majority of the main characters of this book.
There we go.
On Hethrir's world craft, where, and this is a direct quote from Riau, who I normally trust to be a very, very competent person. She said, "The world craft is ready to set sail. We will be at Asylum Station tomorrow morning."
Yeah.
Which left John and I agreeing in our thought that for some reason they were just going to fly Hethrir's whole friggin' planet to Cersei.
Yeah, I mean, we had a lot in the last episode. We're like, but why would, how badly are you going to fuck up this planet by doing that?
So instead, what actually happened at the end of the last chapter is that Riau apparently comes from a planet where leaving your participles dangling is perfectly appropriate.
Yeah. Name your participles or else it gives someone power over you.
Yeah, she was just walking around with her participle all dangling everywhere. How rude. I would have figured Leia gave her some clothes by now.
Yeah, come on, man. This ain't the gym. You can't just have your participle dangling out.
So what she actually meant is that Munto Kodri is going to be the target destination for the Worldcraft, while Leia in the Alderaan, along with Chewbacca, Jacen, Jaina, and Riau, will be heading to Asylum Station, which they will learn when they get there is the same thing as Cersei.
Yeah.
So the whole Worldcraft is on its way to Munto Kodri, and I think that might be our first full-on derail what-the-fuck moment of this chapter.
Yeah, okay. Now, from a narrative perspective, I understand that you want the sort of economy of space here where you're like, look, we've already mentioned one planet in this book. We may as well make that the planet that they go back to. I get that you don't want to try and like make things more complicated than they are, but Munto Kodri's a bad choice for so many reasons.
Well, why don't we go ahead and run those down? First of all, let's run down what the right choice should have been.
It's Coruscant.
It's Coruscant. You should have sent the damn thing to Coruscant.
And the thing is, they've mentioned Coruscant in this book. It's not like it hasn't come up.
Yeah, I mean, and that's where the base of power is. That's where all the ships that can take all these kids home are.
I almost did Coruscant for our bonus content today, but it's very boring. But one of the things about it is, the like galactic coordinates for it is 000. It is the center of the galaxy, essentially.
That isn't true, because the center of the galaxy is Biss, the planet that Sidious is from. But I guess like the way that they do their measurement system, where they put it wherever it is and say, that's the center.
Well, it's the basically trade lanes. They're like, oh, if you're an outer rim, then we don't count you as what the center of the galaxy is.
It's a whole Coruscentric economy.
It is.
Yes.
But the thing is, there's tons of like shipping lanes and travel
so maybe, to be fair, it's not a good idea to send a whole planet to go be in orbit around it then, because it's kind of crowded.
Well, I mean, you don't send it to be in orbit. I don't know that Vonda really understands the size of space. It's very big.
Yeah, here's the problem with the world. The problems with the world craft in general are numerous. It would be too small to see for most people out in space, because it's like a little tiny baby planet. It's way smaller than the moon.
I mean, essentially, you'd be going, oh, yeah, we saw an asteroid.
Yeah, we saw a weirdly blue asteroid. That's what it was. Had a dragon on it.
had its own sun, that asteroid.
Yeah, it was the only asteroid we've seen that has a sun in orbit around it. Real weird.
Real fucking weird.
But, I mean, you can't, if it was any kind of planet at all, you can't send it to orbit around anything, because you're going to fuck up the local orbital dynamics.
You're gonna ruin everything.
But so they should have sent it to Coruscant, and they should have let people at Coruscant know, because if there's one thing Leia actually has to her name, it's a lot of people who work for her. Your Winter and Wedge and Borsk Faelia, all these various characters that exist in the expounded universe that are just the functioning arm of the Coruscant government.
But even then, being that she is like the main diplomat for the New Republic, you would think, okay, we have to get these kids stolen from Republic planets back to where they need to be. Let's send them to the center of the Republic government and get them back to where they should go. But no, we sent them to a fucking backwater that isn't part of our government.
No, specifically, they are not part of the government of the New Republic. That's why Leia was there in the first place, to try and bring them on board. And she didn't finish that job before she escaped from what was essentially custody from them. She didn't leave Munto Kudru on good terms.
No, when she left, essentially they were like, look, if you leave, this is going to fuck things up politically for us.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to make things look very bad if you do this. And she did it anyway, did not send them a letter that was like, oh, by the way, I did find my kids, they're off planet, and you were wrong.
Basically, the chapter is missing a lot of information about how she reached out to the New Republic to let them know what was going on. Because as it stands, what happens here, based only on the information provided in the book, she leaves the planet and goes to Cersei Station to have more adventures. Meanwhile, she sends an entire planet full of kidnapped and terrified five-year-olds and one giant monster that is their cook to Munto Kudru, where I assume Greyk will explain what's going on?
Yeah. Also, I mean, I get it. I get that Greyk is a good person and was a slave, but Leia spent 4 minutes talking to a giant alien that worked for Hethrir, and all Greyk had to do was go like, oh no, I was forced to do this. And she was like, okay, you can be in charge of this planet of children. Good day!
It's
the same as the fucking nameless person on the Ferrari ship, where it's just like, what are you, some random dude? You are in charge of your species, and good day.
Greyk, I leave you in command of all these children. Keep in mind that some of the children are in prison and some of them are not. I leave that up to you.
Either way, you could go, oh yeah, Greyk was super nice and is going to take care of these children, but we already know that she wanted to feed like the nasty, disgusting soup to the Proctor kids and the helpers and whatnot.
Well, as soon as she realized she didn't have to, she didn't want to anymore. She was like, no, we want to give them good food. But honestly, that could just be her saying what she thinks Leia wants to hear.
Oh, yeah. Like, it could go either way of either, oh, she's super angry at her captors and takes it out on these other children, or secretly still working for Hethrir and just turns the fucking planet right around and goes right back where they were.
But no, it's cool. We trust Greyk the Vubig.
I trust this alien I have known for a couple minutes. Goodbye, it's time for more space adventures.
But that still doesn't... Okay, so here's the thing. They send Greyk the Vubig and a whole bunch of kidnapped...
And Finn the human.
Jake the dog. And they send Greyk and a whole bunch of kidnapped, terrified children to the local regional authority of a backwater government that has nothing to do with the New Republic. Here's what they're going to see. Chamberlain of Yawn's going to come out one morning and see a giant planet in his orbit and be like, the hell is that? Then he's going to get a call from a huge, gross, six-legged space monster who's going to say, hi, I have all these kidnapped children, and we're on this cool Imperial slave ship. Please help us. The New Republic said you would. And he'll say, oh, okay, do you happen to have my Wirewolf? Oh, no, we don't know where that is.
No, we don't know. Also, Leia doesn't send any regards. Also, It has been established that your spaceport is tiny and unused, so I'm sure you have the resources to ship people from your shitty backwater out to their planets, right? Anyway, good day!
She might as well have just sent the poor kids to the ruins of Alderaan. This is a bad choice, and the only reason the choice was made at all is because they were like, eh, the first two chapters of this book were on Munto Kodru, let's just go back.
We have to tie this in somehow. Like, up to this point, it has basically been a useless fact that it was on this planet, so...
Oh, good. Hethrir's giant ship full of slave children. Which, by the way, the only thing that we know about the Munto Kodru society is that they live to kidnap children.
Yeah, let's send this planet of kidnapped children to the planet of kidnapping children that don't belong to our government. What could go wrong?
What is this?
Like, you would think maybe for a second that... A planet that's like, oh, we use kidnapping as a way to get politically ahead. And like, weren't you just in political negotiations with them and you sent a planet of children that they could... Hold on. I think you are, perhaps, the worst diplomat ever.
Yeah. Hey, would you guys like a huge planet, a free huge planet that can go into hyperspace and has its own sun, and we loaded it with political capital for you? Also, there's a cookie bouquet.
I assume you will do the right thing. Bye. I'm off to have adventures.
The only thing stopping all you weird sleep-standing-up werewolves from just taking this thing is one alien who's a cook.
That's right. Don't worry. It's the Steven Seagal of aliens, though.
What? This is the dumbest.
I can't deal with how bad of an idea this is.
She's just relying on the good graces of a whole bunch of people she's known for a couple of days.
Yep. It's bad. It's a bad idea, no matter how you slice it.
She should have just sent it to the forest moon of Endor. She knows the Ewoks better.
Been like, I feel like Ewoks would take care of these children better.
Yeah, they'd eat them instead of just throwing them in prison.
Hey, if there's one thing I've learned from Ewok movies, it's that with kids, they're like, nah, you're my size. You're basically a pet for me.
We are pals.
You're my good friend.
Here is a magic headdress.
I'm going to wait until you grow up and get some meat on them bones.
Okay, let's move on from the first line of this chapter. So, basically, Leia and Riau are arriving in the space around Cersei Station.
Well, they're going to take off, but first we have to get back with Han.
Yeah, so Han Solo, who is on a gambling high instead of a gambling low for the moment.
Oh, yeah, and drunk. He is drunk and high on winning at gambling.
And he feels all nervy and on edge like he does on his best days. I feel like this book's trying to tell us that Han has a manic issue.
I'm pretty sure Han has a problem.
He's got like two. I think he's got at least two problems. Because he's definitely got a gambling problem, according to this book.
Oh, yeah.
And then also, he seems to be doing a lot of super highs and super lows. I think he might have a little bipolar happening.
However, what he doesn't have as a problem is a bitch. Of his problems, a bitch is not one.
That's true. I mean, I don't know if that's actually true. I mean, mostly because I don't like the usage of the term. He's got multiple women in his life at the moment.
Oh, no, I'm talking about the werewolf.
Oh, we don't know the gender of the werewolf. That's a specific thing about werewolves, is that you don't get to know their genders.
you can't know them. You gotta squeeze their tummies if you want to find out. I'm a lady.
It's the only thing they can say.
Yep.
Well, unfortunately, it's the only thing they can say, so you don't learn anything
from
it. Yeah,
it's true. All of them say that.
Oh, it's just the sound of them expelling air.
Yeah, oddly enough, it always comes out as, hee-hee, I'm a lady.
So, anyway, he is basically walking into the hotel. He's been up all night gambling. He is quite drunk, and he is flush with excitement because he can't wait to rub his winnings in everyone's faces. He is a man with a problem, having a current manic high.
Cannot wait to rub his dangling participle in everyone's faces.
So, basically, he gets to his hotel room, walks in, tries to find anyone he recognizes, almost slips on the petals of the meat flowers that C-3PO was carrying when Hethrir chopped him in half.
Which I thought we were going to get any sort of payoff. We have, again, two chapters left, and one of our main characters has been sliced in half, and there is no mention of it in this chapter.
It's 3PO. It'll literally be in the coda of the book. It'll be like in the section about Vonda McIntyre on the back of the dust jack. It'll be like, by the way, they found C-3PO's two halves and stuck them back together. Don't worry about it. Vonda McIntyre was raised in Montauk, New Jersey. They found C-3PO and sewed him back together. She now has two children and lives in Montauk, New Jersey. I don't know where she lives or anything about her.
I mean, that would be a really rad thing for 3PO to have, like, a giant through his body scar, essentially.
Just, like, permanently.
Where he had to get, like, melded back together.
They just say, the last chapter is 7 years later, and it's just C-3PO showing up, and he has an eye patch.
Oh, yeah.
You left me. Bitches. You left me for dead, Master Luke. You left me to die. But I didn't, and I've spent every day plotting this moment. Would you care for tea?
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. Good day.
Ooh, oh, my.
Right back to normal. All right, so... But yeah, he almost slips on the meat flower petals that 3PO left, and then he goes up to his hotel room and bangs on the door.
Yeah,
And
but unfortunately, no one's answering, and his card doesn't work.
And so he bangs and rings for a while until finally a lady answers the door via like a little TV
screen.
Yeah, I don't know. That doesn't seem like a convenient thing to me. Like
it's a weird thing that a hotel in a weird like. Out of the way space station where things are sort of cobbled together
and seedy.
They're like, oh yeah, but we have a hollow projection screen so you can talk to someone outside your door.
Yeah, the last thing I want when I'm staying at a seedy motel is for people on the other side of the door to see what horrible things I'm doing in there.
Like, that's exactly what I want people to see.
If I'm like at a Motel 8 in Los Angeles and someone knocks on the door, I don't want them to be able to see how gross. I'm like, oh, look at me. I'm smeared in Frank's Red Hot sauce and.
That's what you do.
I've got the air conditioning cranked to 30 degrees in here. I've been playing Game Boy for 14 straight hours. Instead of going to the work convention I was supposed to, I look like Jake Busey.
I look like James Buchanan.
And the last thing I want to do is activate a little hollow screen. James Buchanan, one of our earliest presidents.
My God, who could possibly have a mental image of that?
What was he, the 15th president?
One of them early ones.
He's the 15th, I'm pretty sure. I think he's one of the ones that's supposed to be famously like the worst possible president. He did like nothing to stave off the Civil War.
Yeah, he's a dick.
Yeah, he was a shit president, if I'm remembering correctly. Anyway. So there's a hot lady in there now instead, and she's like, what? What are you doing here? This isn't a good time for trading.
I will meet you in the morning.
Come back, and I will take you to my ship to show you my merchandise.
My ship sails in the morning. I wonder what's for dinner.
Oh, boy, I'm so hungry, I could give myself a promotion. Memes. YouTube poop.
Hey, guys. We've been quoting a YouTube poop.
For no good reason. But no, there's like some lady in a robe in there, and she says the most generic thing she could. Like, she's a video game NPC.
Yeah.
Come back later, and I will show you my merchandise.
Come back, in different color text, in the morning.
Oh, basically, and by saying my merchandise, what she says is, I'm not a real vendor in this game. Please do not try to buy things from me. So, but she's hot, though. The book makes sure that we know that she's a gorgeous and beautiful woman who is merely disheveled.
Thank you, Vonda. That's what we needed.
One of the three. Is she a character from a Star Wars book? Is she a sex haver, or is she a gross blob?
It's a sex haver.
This one's a sex haver.
Whoop.
So, Han goes, he keeps trying to bang his way in, but then my favorite part of the... Ooh, something that could be one of my problems. All of a sudden, two giant C-3POs appear. R2-D2s appear.
It's way better that they're two big R2-D2s.
This is my favorite part of this whole chapter. Two R2-D2s appear because she has summoned security, and their security is bumper droids?
Yeah. He describes them as R2-D2 on steroids.
Yeah, as Han's like, they look like R2-D2 on growth steroids.
You know, it's unlike shrink steroids that you normally see.
Well, it's R2-D2s, but they've got tiny balls.
Real, real shriveled sacks on them R2-D2s. The truck nuts on the back of that R2-D2, very tiny.
His data probe can't even fill the slot anymore, if you understand what I'm coming from.
If you get what I'm putting down.
His little jump jets won't even get him off the ground.
Those jump jets aren't getting anybody off anymore.
When he sprays his oil slicks, it's just a little dribble. So anyway, two big-ass R2-D2s, so basically just full-size garbage cans, come rolling out from either side of the hallway, and Han's, like, trying to work his way past them into the door, and they're just like, boop.
Yeah, they're just bumping him. He's like, hey, let me get past... Donk.
No, oh, come on, but I just want to get...
Donk.
Okay, but no, hang on, just let me just get around.
Donk.
No, but I don't even understand.
Donk.
Eventually, they just donk him down the stairs.
Yeah. Fucking Han gets donked out of the building.
By two trash cans on wheels.
Like, ladies and gentlemen, the hero of the Republic, Han Solo, donked out of a hotel by two garbage cans on treads.
What happened?
What the fuck just happened here?
He's like, but I'm really good at gambling.
Donk.
Oh, damn it. Let's just step around you. I mean, you're not that fast.
Donk.
Come on now.
You've donked me well and true, gentlemen.
Oh, if it was only one of these things, I could have done it, but...
I try to go one way and I get donked. And I go the other way and I get donked.
There's only two ways to go.
The other way has a do not disturb sign on it.
So he gets pushed downstairs where he confronts the whirlwind that is the proprietor of this hotel.
It's like an
air elemental.
I don't understand what's going on because I thought when he first showed up it was just some alien, but now he keeps referring to it as the whirlwind.
At first I thought that this thing was basically just a light projection on a spray of water.
At first, like, I thought this thing was going to fight the wasp.
Yeah, it's Whirlwind. It's that mutant from the Marvel Universe that no one remembers.
It's
like a bullet.
Who's a green red tornado.
Yeah, he's a green bullet guy who has saw blades for weapons, and his power is to spin at subsonic speed, which incidentally is also my superpower.
Yeah. Oddly enough, listed under my superpowers, I have multiple limbs.
John and I spent last night looking up obscure DC or Marvel villains, including Spiral, whose first superpower is multiple limbs. And I was like, hey, me too.
What do you know? I guess I'm a mutant.
Good for me. But yeah, that's his power. It was listed as his ability is to spin at subsonic speeds. Hey.
Same.
I can't create tiny tornadoes with it, but I bet I can antagonize the Wasp. Hey, Wasp, I'm not touching you. I'm not touching you.
I'm just going to spin around with my hands out, and if you get hit, it's your fault.
I'm going to rob a bank like this somehow.
Just spinning slowly towards the vault. Everyone's like, oh, I don't want to get slapped, though. And he's not doing anything wrong.
The Whirlwind's basically just a Marvel villain who exists because sometimes you have four villains and there are five Avengers.
Also, this guy. Hello.
I'm here, too.
Hi, I wear a dumb hat. Why?
It helps me spin.
I'm spinning.
So Han confronts the proprietor of the hotel, who is some sort of whirlwind of air over a pool of water. I don't know if he's a phantasmic-style projection or if he's actually like a little water and air elemental, but he's like, hey, what happened to my room? And the projection guy's like, well, you weren't paying for it, and also there was a conference scheduled for this weekend, so I kicked you out. And he's like, but I'll throw money at you.
Yeah, thank you, drunk Han Solo, for taking a wad of credits, throwing it into a pool, and then getting donked out of the hotel.
Yeah,
anyway.
The two R2-D2s, which apparently had to take some escalator or something to get down here finally.
Oh, yeah. They are just full-on Daleks without guns.
Maybe these are the downstairs bonk droids.
Yeah, them downstairs bonk droids.
Oh, man.
You know
what
I mean?
No, do.
I got them downstairs bonk droids.
I got my downstairs bonk droids for you. But no, just think about it. These are just the B model of the gonk droid.
Oh, yeah.
They're bonks. Bonk.
Donk.
So they donk him out of the building.
I love that he throws money and then just loses it. And he's like, aw.
Yeah, because the whirlwind's like, too late. Go away. And then Han's just like, well, where are all my friends? Where's Luke and Zaveri? I don't want to talk to Zaveri, but I bet I can find Luke. I bet he's at Waru's house.
At first, I bet he's at the Millennium Falcon.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Like, they're just sleeping there. And then, coincidentally, all the interference goes away. They're like, oh, and then as soon as he thinks of contacting the Millennium Falcon, the asteroid that they are sitting on for this station turns such that it's no longer facing the fucking star.
Or the black hole, yeah.
And he's like, oh, I can contact it, and no one has been there. And then as soon as I confirm that, we immediately turn back around, and then interference starts up again.
Ooh, four bars. Okay, hold still. Aw.
Aw.
We get a lot. For some reason, this chapter in particular is very full of descriptions of the crystal star and the black hole and the cosmic dance therein. Because it's pretty, it's well written. It's like, and then all of a sudden, the double binary hell star sucking energy from the mighty white dwarf spins around in a beautiful display of flipsery that really messes with everybody's bars.
Yeah, I mean, this is the point where I go, all right, I can tell, Vonda, that you're an actual decent writer if you were writing your own shit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she has that one book that won, like, a Hugo, a Nebula, and a Locus Award.
Oh, yeah.
Like, at once. I think it's called Dream Snake.
Yeah, she was huge in, like, the 70s.
Yes.
But at this point, I go, man, don't... I feel like you just shouldn't be writing for Star Wars, because you apparently do not give a fuck about it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You can see the cost per word in this book. I don't know. I know she wrote at least one of the short stories in one of those Tales From books, so she got a little more work out of Star Wars.
Yeah, I just...
But I think she was just redoing a bathroom.
Man, yeah. It's because, again, there are times in this book where I will read it and go, oh, you can actually write really well. You turn a good phrase. You are an odd fellow, but I must say, you turn a good phrase.
Boy. Yeah. So, so yeah, she's a good writer. She really is. This is not her material, the material that she should have been working on. Anyway, Han kind of decides to stumble to Waru's building.
Yeah, he's like, all right, well, the only place I know where any of the people I know congregate at all is this place.
And I guess at this point, I have forgotten the specific order of the mini micro chapters in this chapter.
It's time to check in with Tigress.
Do we got to check in with Tigress? Okay. So Tigress is in one of the, like, meeting halls in Waru's building. So it's like one of those meeting halls they have at an airport lounge at the Hilton, the airport Hilton.
Yeah.
It's like a big old meeting room, and there's... You know, some half bagels on one side and some thin orange juice. That kind of situation.
That thin orange juice.
No pulp. Pulp's the good part.
Pulp is the worst part. Give me negative pulp, please. I want that orange juice to pull pulp out of me. I want to be depulped by my orange juice.
To be fair, you are pretty full of pulp or something.
To be fair, I'm pretty pulped up.
You're pretty pulpy or something that resembles pulp.
I am basically a big... squishy pile of pulp at this point. I'm pretty much a few gold scales away from Waru, is what I'm saying.
What we're saying is that on the Vonda McIntyre scale of creating Star Wars species, you're a gross blob.
That is what we are saying, yes.
You're a quivering wet blob of pulp.
I am orange pulp made flesh. Good day, sir. Would you like to buy my art?
I guess that's why they make the different kinds of orange juice, because I like my orange juice to basically be chewable.
Ugh. Oh, that's disgusting.
Anyway, Tigress is hanging out in this building with a whole lot of Hethrir's followers. So this is actually an interesting reunion special. Lusa's here.
Oh, yeah, because the big thing outside of him just taking care of Anakin is all of the, like, special people here, because this is supposed to be all of the higher-ups in Hethrir's command structure.
Yeah, so Lady Ucky is making a grand reappearance.
And we get Lord Kakakukaku!
Yeah, Lady Ucky and Lord Kakakukaku are here, although Lady Ucky gets a better seat because she paid more money.
Yeah, you're damn right she did.
So she gets a good seat. Kakakukaku is sitting out amongst the other followers, and there's one weird guy who is refusing to sit down, and that guy has the Chamberlain's Wirewolf.
Yep, we find out that I think the Wirewolf has been almost killed several times, and well, every time they're like, oh, who cares about this weird dog?
Well, I mean, we know the arc of the Wirewolf is known. Back when Lady Ucky was the one who won the highest possible bidding rights in order to secure, like, the rights to distribute
the ability
children
to sell off these kids.
Whatever. Hethrir threw in the Wirewolf for free.
Yeah.
So the Wirewolf had left planet with Lady Ucky a long time ago. And apparently she sold it to this guy, this new player in the whole story, Lord Brasha'a.
And, okay, the weird thing to me is he's throwing in the Wirewolf for free, which means that it's not one of the kids. So you'd think everyone here has one of these children.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a reason for that. I assume they're probably going to feed it to Waru.
Yeah, they're all getting the chance. At this point, John and I are more or less in agreement that what's going to happen at this big airport Hilton meeting is that they're going to haul Waru out on stage, and he's going to give a big old Tony Robbins-style presentation, And then one by one, he's going to eat all these children.
Yeah, and that's, I think, don't know yet, but I'm pretty sure Hethrir's big plan is, if I feed enough kids to Waru, he's going to give me
unlimited power,
like, way more force power, or he'll turn me human, because that's what his big thing that he wants is.
That would be pretty crazy. So maybe both. Maybe he'll just get turned into a Vaderman.
Yeah, he's like, look, I want you to straight up turn me into a Vadersman.
He's like, fine, you're Chad Vader.
Yay.
So
I'm Chad Vader, ASB president.
So all these folks are hanging around with their various Lusas and other alien creatures that probably are force sensitive to feed to this big monster. But you see, Lord Brasha'a has a problem.
Oh, yeah. When Hethrir says everyone should sit down, he doesn't because he's not sure what's going on here.
So this is the big meeting where Hethrir explains to everyone what's going on here. That's the point of this meeting.
Yeah, he's like, look, I've called you all here because it's time for me to tell you my plan.
And Tigris has a couple of minutes to think about Lord Brasha'a. And he's like, oh, I know this guy. He's the most tight-fisted and miserly of all of the Empire Reborn weirdo old people.
That's why he only got this werewolf instead of an actual kid.
That's why he has to be here with a dog instead of a kid to feed to Waru. And Waru's not going to want to eat that dog.
I mean, Waru's probably going to want to eat that dog. Let's be honest.
Let me get that dog first. I'm going to eat half the dog now.
Yeah.
We'll see how I feel. The dog is basically like garlic bread. Just bring me a basket of dog, and we'll go from there.
We'll see what happens.
Is dog free?
Do I have unlimited dog?
Do you have unlimited dog sticks?
Unlimited salad and dog sticks.
Maybe we just found the title of the episode. So, anyway, Brasha'a is like, Lord, I've got questions. Which, how is this dude, who has never given Hethrir the amount of money Hethrir would like, and how has he not seen Hethrir kill a guy for just asking a random question before?
Or even not, even if he hasn't seen, like, oh, he's been on planet and hasn't even met with Hethrir. It's mostly just been through, like, communiques and whatnot.
Yeah, like, at least
at that point, like, Uki or Kakakukaku would have been like, oh, yeah, fucking...
Snores
got straight fucking murdered because he didn't pay enough and had the temerity to say... Maybe I shouldn't pay this much?
He basically said, that seems awfully expensive.
Yeah, like, he didn't say he wouldn't. He just said it was expensive, and Hethrir murdered him.
Yeah.
And you're standing up and being like, hey, buddy, fuck you.
I've got questions. It's like, do we need to see this scene again? It's just the same scene. I mean, there's a difference, and I understand why we're seeing it again. Because Brasha'a's like, hey, man, I don't like what we're doing, because I feel like we're giving too much attention to all these non-humans. All of our people are getting used to having non-humans around, and I, as a huge Imperial racist, don't like that. So what I want to know is, what's your big plan? And that's why I've come here to the What's Hethrir's Big Plan seminar, featuring the power of positive eating children.
Yeah, because he's like, oh man, this New Republic, it's got to go soon, or else we're going to be like equals with people, and that's worse than anything.
So basically Hethrir's like, ugh, okay, I'm going to kill you. Look.
Okay, buddy, hey. I don't think you understand how this goes. I'm an evil overlord, and you just singled yourself out.
Yeah, so he basically tries to force kill Brasha'a. And he does it the same way he always does, which is just sort of look at them and stop talking until they die.
Yeah, he's almost force choking, almost like forcing blood out of their nonsense.
I think he's trying to stroke him out or something.
Yeah, he is.
But there's something wrong with this planet, and we know this already because of Luke, that's fucking with force. And we don't know if it's Waru, we don't know if it's the Crystal Star, we don't know yet.
We don't know anything, and the book's about to end.
But we do know that force don't work so good around here, and so while he's trying to kill off Lord Brasha'a, he can't.
Yeah, he manages to get to the point where Brasha'a gets choked a bit, he has blood coming out of his eyes, but he's not dead.
He's apologizing and says, my lord, please forgive me.
But he manages to run out of the building before being killed.
And escape. And Hethrir's just standing there like, what the hell? What now?
Yeah, Hethrir's like all pale and sweaty, like, why the fuck can't I do this?
Yeah, grayer than usual. And I'm like, wait, how is he gray at all? I thought he was gold.
Yeah.
Wasn't the whole point of these guys that they have gold skin and they turn silver when they get scarred?
Nah, man, it's that he has golden red hair.
No, it's both. It's both. They have gold skin, they scar in silver, and they have three colors hair.
Three colors hair, thank you.
Three colors hair, by the way, is my least favorite Chinese food option at the local place.
I'll get the three colors hair, thank you.
I'll take the double happiness and the three colors hair. So, okay. Then he kind of just strides over to Tigress, who's like, the fuck just happened? Did I just watch my master fail at something? This is revelatory for me.
This has rocked my worldview. Also, this is another chapter that has Anakin referring to himself in the third person.
Anakin want woof.
Anakin want woof.
Because as soon as Brashad drops the chain he was holding the Wirewolf by, it goes walking over to Anakin and falls asleep near him.
Yeah.
And Anakin's like, Anakin want woof. And then Hethrir walks over because apparently Tigress has his lightsaber.
Yeah, because Hethrir's lightsaber fucked up in the last chapter when he went to go slice the C-3PO in half.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't going to pick it up because it malfunctioned so terribly. So he's like, Tigress, pick that up for me.
That's right.
And so Tigress still, just has still it. Had it.
Yeah. And he's like, were you planning to hold my lightsaber forever, boy?
Ah, boy.
You play a good game, boy. Advance. So gets the lightsaber back. And then I guess he sort of launches into his big plan, his villainous plan.
Well, I mean, first, we have to check back in with Han before we get the speech.
I know. I'm just saying that he launches into it, and then we go to check with Han. Han.
Yeah.
Han is heading into Waru's building, and he's passed by some sort of feathered velociraptor man who's like, whoa, they closed services for the
whoa
day,
there,
my friend.
Buddy, you're too late.
Slow down, Maurice, he says. And Han's like, no, it's cool. I'm meeting a guy. And the guy's like, okay, bye-bye then. I'm a feathered bug monster or something.
Sounds good. I've got scales and feathers, and I change color. Okay.
Well, cool, that's a lot great. Of cool descriptions. Makes it sound like you might not be a sex haver, though, so I'm going to keep moving.
I don't think you're a sex haver, and I don't recognize you from the movies, so I should probably go before you like spew goo all over me.
Before you goo up the place real good with your blobs.
Before you're like, oh, please stay a while and listen, and then you like encase me in some sort of ooze.
He's just nothing but protoplasm and tentacles underneath his feather and scale hat.
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, this feathers and scales is the clothes I wear. Underneath is a gross blob.
I'm basically a writhing mass of hagfish. It's an art project.
Look, I've got so many weird sucking mouths.
Yeah, bro. All right, so Han makes his way into Waru's actual, like, antechamber, where Waru was hanging out. Not the narthex, the actual antechamber.
Yes.
And sure
into
enough.
And then the chamber and the antechamber touch, and then a giant explosion happens.
So Luke is hanging around with Waru, and Waru is basically starting up one of his standard, I'm a big whiny, passive-aggressive douchebag speeches. He's
oh,
like,
oh, I do so much.
Oh, human. Like all living beings, I tire, and so I ask everyone, leave me be. Can you not and please accommodate my simple request?
Oh, I'm so sleepy. Let my giant goo body relax.
And Luke's like, but I think I might be dying.
I'm pretty sure I'm gonna die.
So, you know, Waru's like, fine then. And then Luke puts his hands on Waru. Getting ready to be gooped up real good.
Yeah, he's like,
gold.
I'm going to get up on that dais and be like, yeah. Sup, bruh.
Now, this changes something in Waru, who immediately is like, oh, shit, Jedi meat.
Oh, yeah, baby. Let's get it going.
But Han's there, and so Han grabs Luke and starts pulling him away.
Like, straight tackles him off of the stage, and he's like, nope.
Nope, you're coming with me. And Luke immediately reaches for his saber, and Han's like, look, dude, you're not going to hit me with your lightsaber. Like, he finally has the conversation we wished he had had six chapters ago.
Yeah.
Where he's like, quit reaching for that thing, you dumbass. You're not going to chop me up with your lightsaber. I'm your brother-in-law.
Also, at this point, Luke's like, I'm going to give him a lightsaber. Good night.
Oh, I don't feel so good. Put me back on that, Waru.
Like, Han's drunk, but fucking Luke, at this point, is basically, like, fallen asleep in his own burger crumblings drunk. Well,
that's a story. Oh, man. About a year ago, almost exactly, we went to a local convention here in San Diego called the Kingdom Con.
Every year at Kingdom Con, Drunk Quest, as we have noted before.
Yeah, Drunk Quest is this awesome game that we play there every year. John and I are both really good at it. We both have competitive mugs for being really good at Drunk Quest.
Yeah.
We went to In-N-Out afterwards. I had had 14 ciders because I'm an idiot. John had not because he's relatively intelligent.
I mean, I had close, but also I hold my liquor way better.
I don't know if that's... I drank so much. I got to the point where I was aggressively drinking at you.
Oh, I know.
You were like, Jeff, cut it out. And I was like, no, bring me more cider, and I'm going to point at you while I drink it. Make eye contact with me.
I want you to see me destroying myself.
So I was 14 ciders deep, which meant for while you're at In-N-Out, I was more or less not trying to talk to people. I knew enough to be like, all right, keep your stupid in and add burgers to that stupid.
Yeah.
But we had a friend with us, a guy named John, who was a different John.
And man, he was like top five, definitely alcohol poisoned, just asleep with a burger on his chest that he would occasionally awaken to eat again.
Yeah, he leaned back enough that a burger rested comfortably upon his paunch. And it stayed in his hand, and every once in a while he would shiver like a bear in March, raise the burger to his lips, bite through it, and fall asleep again.
I don't think I ever saw him chew,
no.
But he would get burger in his mouth, and it would basically stay there.
And then his arm would go back down like a garage door closing. Clunk. It was even for me, and I was as drunk as I've ever been, it was a spectacle.
Yeah. So this is where Luke is at this point.
That's where Luke is. He's burger crumbles drug.
He has fallen asleep in his own burger crumblings. That is how fucked up he is.
And he's basically arguing with Han, who is dragging him away. And he's also arguing with Waru, who just got a sweet taste of Jedi meat and is like, no, I must heal him.
He gave consent. Let me do this. Look, Luke
this
is too fucked up to give
shit.
Consent.
Yeah.
He cannot do this.
Yeah.
No, bring him back. It's cool, bro. Don't be a cock block.
You were supposed to be my wingman.
Come on. Look, that Jedi's ready to go.
Look, I spent 2 hours plying him with gross force magic and a hot tub. By the way, grossest hot tub in all of space.
That's me.
It looks like French onion soup in there.
It's even got a nice thick layer of cheese on top.
I've got a slave that just stirs it, otherwise it congeals.
Same with me, though. Stir me. I mean, stir me so that I do not congeal.
We know he congeals because there's meat stalactites coming off him, off of his dais, like friggin' underneath a Euro machine.
Yep.
So Han manages to drag...
So Han gets him out.
He drags him out to Zaveri's secret path. And then we go back to... Which one do we want to do? Do you want to do the Leia?
We go back to Hethrir doing his speech.
So Hethrir's giving his speech, and his speech is literally the speech that the Flash gives in that one really good episode of Justice League Unlimited where he switches brains with Lex Luthor. He's like, and now I shall tell you my plan. My villainous plan. Question the plan at your peril. Everyone go around the room and announce your part of the plan. Because he has no fucking... He's got nothing. His plan is like, I will become awesome, and then the Empire Reborn.
What we're going to do, my plan is, the Empire Reborn will be born, and then it will destroy the Republic.
And he's got a bunch of, you know, metaphors. I will rise from the ground like brilliant metals and be polished into greatness. I shall become a cloud that looks like a top hat, and then it looks like a star, and then it looks like a fighter jet. Am I making my point?
I shall rise from the ashes like a mighty phoenix and then fall into the dirt like a less mighty phoenix.
I shall rise from the ashes like a mighty phoenix and then blast Cyclops.
Like a mighty Havoc. And it will have no effect, for they are brothers.
I was going to say, don't they have the dumb now, mutant ability of being immune to each other?
Oh, yes. Of course they do.
So
because their powers both key into the same weird dimension, and they're both immune to their own effects. That's why they can close their eyes without blowing their eyelids off. So, you know.
Well, Havoc can close his eyes without blowing his eyelids off because his power
comes
out of
his
chest and
hands.
That's
a weird thing for Havoc. He can't close his eyes without blowing his eyelids off.
But he doesn't shoot lasers out of his eyes. It comes out of his, like, chest.
Oh, I know. That's why it's weird for him. That's it. He just, if he closes his eyelids, they blow off. They grow back.
They grow every time, overnight.
Yeah, it's just a weird thing for him.
Gnomes and pixies come in the night and replace his eyelids for a bowl of milk.
X-Men got real weird in the 90s.
I like that that's when they got weird. All right. So he's explaining his ridiculously stupid plan. Meanwhile, Tigress is straight up turning.
Tigress is like, you know, I think of Anakin as my little brother, and boy, I wish I had a little brother, and I don't know, like a weird, ugly, horrible dog.
Yeah, and then at the end of this little subchapter, Hethrir kind of Pied Pipers everybody up into the next room. He's like, all right, everyone, it's time to reborn the Empire.
And now, follow me! And he walks down the aisle without looking at anyone, and like, proctors have to run ahead to open the door for him.
There is one last time in this chapter, and I hope it's not the very last time in the book, where Tigress stops for a moment to appreciate the uniforms of the young Empire Reborn.
Oh, yeah.
Like again, with their light blue tunics festooned with medals and fineries. Oh, the thrill of it.
Oh, God. Fucking Tigress, please.
Just stop.
Just get over it.
I just kind of hope that at the end of the book, someone gives him a rust-colored tunic of a helper, and he's like, yay, my dream's fulfilled.
All I ever wanted. Like, anyway. Man, get better dreams, because apparently all you want is a fucking jumpsuit. Like,
well, tunic. Not, I mean, I'm pretty sure that the helpers pretty much just get to wear, like, sackcloth robes, and they're a good color.
Nah, man, because the
the Empire Reborn guys are in the pale blue jumpsuits.
Yeah, that's what he wants.
Yeah,
he'll settle for the rust-colored tunic.
I want one of those pale blue jumpsuits, dude. I'll look like Dr. Venture.
I have one of those pale blue jumpsuits.
Same here. Anyway, that's the end of them for now.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Leia has landed on the planet, and we get... oh, gosh, before I forgot to mention this, but back when they were flying in, we had to get yet another scene where Leia tries to convince Chewbacca not to do anything. Seventh one or something.
That is the only thing that Leia is here to do is be like, look, Chewbacca, you're competent, so what I need to do is go out there and be a big dumb idiot. You need to stay on the ship.
Please stay in this room with my kids, you nanny. I'm surprised she didn't just straight up use, like, rich New York nanny language with him. Stay in here, not day off-o.
Honestly, I'm amazed she doesn't just treat him like the dog trying to get out when you leave the house. You're like, whoa, just sticking her leg in between the screen door. Oh, back, oh, back, no,
not right now. Not right now, we'll go walks later.
No, back inside.
I need you to work on President's Day. Look, you remember that time I gave you a big box of old t-shirts? You owe me.
Leia, again, in this fucking chapter is like, well... I finally was able to give up being Lalila. Now I'm back to just being Leia. Anyway, I'm Lalila again.
Call me Lalila. But this time I'm not pretending to be Lalila. I'm just saying I'm Lalila.
This time I'm not going to pretend to be Lalila. I'm going to be exactly the same as I was before. You know, like when I was pretending to be Lalila.
She's like, I will no longer subsume myself into the personality of Lalila. Sure, yeah, that's because that's what you were doing.
Yeah, that's great. You've got Tommy Wiseau levels of self-deception here on how grand you think you are being.
We need more butt shots of Princess Leia.
Oh, my God. It's like looking at a pockmarked moon. What is...
Hi, Chewbacca. You're my favorite doggy.
Bye, doggy. That is what's happening here.
All right, so... Anyway, at this point, they're getting off the ship, and they're in that taxi cab with the spider driver.
Yeah, because he's the only one, apparently.
He's the local taxi driver. And they're like, hey, are there records of ships that came in? And he's got an interesting way of speaking, so he's like, yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Can we see them? No, you can't. Why not? Because, you know, the company that has them wouldn't want you to see them.
Because that's a ridiculous thing to suggest that you'd be able to do?
Yeah. Man, I'm giving you less stars on this lift. Anyway, he starts driving them to the airport, and then Jaina, out the window of the little taxi, sees Lady Ucky's personal starship.
Yeah, because,
and like, she remembers it.
Ooh, it's that gold ship that showed up once.
So, okay, here's who's here. We've got Riao. We've got Princess Leia pretending to be Lalila again. We've got Chewbacca not pretending to be gay Ahab.
He's just like, nah, Chewbacca.
I'm good. I'm fine.
We're fine here.
I'm still waiting for these dumb colors to fall out. But
like, I took a shower, and it's mostly blended in, but god damn it.
Yeah. And we have Jason and Jaina, because they didn't want to leave them on the ship. So Leia's like, well, that's one of their ships. Driver, take me to that ship immediately.
Drive me closer. I want to hit it with my sword.
And the driver's, even for a moment, even the driver's like, that's dumb.
Why?
That's not your ship. Why would you want to go over there?
What are you hoping to accomplish here, Leia?
And even the kids, you know, everybody else in the car, they don't say anything. I think because they've just gotten used to just doing whatever Leia wants. But everyone's got to be thinking, like, there's no way they're sitting in the ship, Leia. They didn't fly all the way here to sit in the ship.
Yeah, they're not like, look, we're going to sit. Nobody gets out of the ship. I'm getting a small black coffee, and we are leaving.
Asylum Station! Asylum Station! I want a sweet meat.
We've got sweet meats at home.
I want to fuck a ghostling. I want to see the Brebisham heaps.
No, apparently she's like, I'm going to go knock on that spaceship. And
indeed she does.
What the fuck? Okay, I at least understand that Jaina's like, that's a thing I recognize. I think my friend that I made might be on it because I have no actual concept of things because I'm five.
Yeah.
I want to go over to that ship because it's a thing I know.
Yeah.
I understand that. You're a five-year-old. Great. But Leia being like, yeah, this sounds like a good plan. I'm going to knock on a spaceship and, okay, one of two things is going to happen. One, no one answers, and that was stupid. Two, someone answers, and it's a bad guy's ship. What do you think they're going to do?
Just give up. Oh, no, you guys are in a taxi.
Oh, no, a bunch of idiots in a taxi. It's a good thing I'm in a fucking spaceship. I guess I'll turn my turbo lasers on you. Get the fuck out.
Or, more interestingly, I'll leave.
Oh, yep, you found me out. I sure do have Lusa on this ship, and I'm an evil lady. Good day! And leave.
What is this plan? So they knock on the door, and wouldn't you know it, it's answered by like a star-nosed mole alien.
Yeah, it's... It is definitely a disgusting heap alien that answers the door.
And it's like, oh, are you here to buy slaves? And it's like, that's a little unsubtle. Come on, guy. At least use some of the code language. Be like, are you here for the industry? Here on Asylum Station?
Are you here for the convention?
Are you here for the trade? You know, but no, he's like, are you here to buy slaves? Human slaves? Or would you prefer trans species? And they're all like, we're here to find Lusa. I do not know what that is. We're here to find the owner of this ship. Lady Yucky is the... at this point, the star-nosed mole is straight up the character from Wayne's World. it's the Chris Farley character from Wayne's World. It's just, that guy's new... That star-nosed mole alien knew a surprisingly large amount about Mr. Big. Because she's like, you will find Lady Yucky at the Crater Lounge. Inquire at the Crater Lounge for Lady Yucky. She has gone there for a conference on the slave trade. You will find her there. Do not disturb me here. I will go this way, and then I will go this way to the Crater Lounge.
And then just shuts the door, and they're like, keep banging on it. I'm like,
banging on the side
why?
Of it. Yep. What is this?
Even if they open up again, what else do you want from this fucking alien? Leia, for the love of God.
So they go, they go into the city.
And that is where we end, is with the weird taxi going into the city. We have two chapters left. Two! But, and fucking nothing. There has not been conflict in this book.
Okay, there's been the chase of the kids by the other kids. I think that's the closest we get to conflict. Here's what I really want from this book at some point. A lightsaber fight. You introduced two new force users. Both of them have lightsabers. Can I see a lightsaber fight that doesn't involve cutting C-3PO in half?
Like, give me some sort of tension or conflict where it's like, oh man, there's a blaster fight or someone's doing a thing. Like, the kids running away is close-ish, but even then it's, oh, we're way the fuck out in front of them, and then we just go into this tree.
Yeah, the closest things to an interesting fight we've had in this book have been Luke going crazy near Han, doing, like, the Boogie Nights thing.
Yeah.
Hey, you guys want to listen to some of this?
But, like...
Motor it!
The kids are mostly just dicking around and then occasionally trick their way into getting out.
Mm-hmm.
Leia never fights anyone, never does anything, is terrible at her entire existence, and then fucking fails forward because that's the thing that she is in.
I'm sorry, for a minute there I was picturing C-3PO setting off fireworks in the background.
And then fucking Han and Luke are like, oh, here's a weird alien.
They're doing Real Housewives of Atlanta bullshit.
Waru should have been the main point of this book, and he is an afterthought.
Oh yeah, you barely even notice Waru. This is the one. This is the most agency we've seen Waru exhibit in this chapter, when he's like, no, bring me back that Jedi.
I have some sort of mind, apparently.
Oh, I wish I wasn't sessile, but I am.
Yeah.
Please put that dude on me. I will devour him. It's like if the villain of Star Wars was the Great Pit of Carcoon. Hey, get over here. Hey, you, fall in me. Hey, come on, fall in this Sarlacc pit that I am. Oh, I'll get you. Oh, I'll talk someone into it.
Ooh.
Hey, you.
Get in here. It's going to be great.
Hey, you Gamorrean. There's pig food in here, huh? Oh, no. Hey, other Gamorreans. There's a dead Gamorrean in here.
Ooh.
You can have all his rags and axes.
All of his rags and axes. Also, that is definitely the Gamorrean magazine to subscribe to.
Rags and axes?
Yes.
I'd subscribe to that, too, especially if I was into, like, cool guitars.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's the whole chapter.
That's it. Everyone just kind of wanders around it. No one reveals anything, and nothing happens. The crystal star.
The stage is set. Is it, though? I mean, everyone's just sort of wandering randomly around Cersei Station at this point.
The stage has been being set for 11 chapters now.
This is one of those songs that's like all build up and no, you know, fun chorus and bridge part.
Oh, my God. It's that song that does like the full build, and you think they're about to break and do something super rad and rocking, and then it just keeps sort of maintaining that level.
It's the airborne toxic event with that Sometime Around Midnight song, where you keep hoping for a chorus or something. And it, I mean, it, don't get me wrong, it's a rad song, but it doesn't. It just ends at the end of it. It's just like build, 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 build. Oh my God, build, 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 end. Like if a roller coaster was actually an escalator.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. You're like, oh, here we go.
Thanks for riding.
And there you go.
You're at the top now. Go ahead and get off there. Thank you.
You can take the stairs down.
So we have two chapters for this thing to collapse into an actual story.
Yeah. God damn it. Oh, okay. Sure. Whatever. We're done.
All right, John. So thanks so much for listening, as always, to Expounded Universe. As we like to talk about at the end of these episodes now, we now have bonus content available for Expounded Universe, and that's where John and I tell each other stories from the fun world of Wookiepedia. We find things in this chapter that were of interest to us, and we go on a mission into Wookiepedia to find fun content to describe to you.
Content that may or may not actually pertain to what was in the chapter.
Well, sometimes there's just nothing interesting in the chapter. This chapter, surprisingly little Wookiepedia content. We had to do some digging.
Yeah, because nothing happened here.
But we did, and it's ready for you out there. It's waiting for you at patreon.com/systemmastery, where if you pledge $2 per episode of System Mastery, which averages out to about $4 a month, you'll receive not only 4 bonus Expounded Universe episodes every month, but also our 2 bonus System Mastery episodes every month. So that's 6 extra episodes of our shows for about $4 a month.
It's kind of crazy.
It's a dumb deal. We shouldn't have done it, but we did. we're locked.
We're so stupid.
We're locked into it. We are living in cardboard boxes, folks. This is our mistake at your benefit.
We have made our errors, and now we must sleep in them.
I am sleeping in the Patreon. Once again, that's patreon.com/systemmastery. Otherwise, you can find us as System Mastery on Gmail, Facebook, Reddit, Twitter.
We're like 5 people away from 1,000 on Twitter.
We're losing followers. We had 995 the other day. We're at 992 right now. What did we do to you, listener?
What did we do?
I assume that's people who died?
No, man, because then they wouldn't unsubscribe. You're not like dying breath. Must not follow.
All right, well then fine. If you're upset with us and are about to unfollow, please die right before you do.
Please die rather than make our numbers go down.
Thank you.
Thanks.
That's all. That's all I'm saying.
That's it. That's all I'm saying.
And if you are about to die, push your Patreon up for a month.
You know, right before you die. Just be like, yeah, fucking $100. Who cares?
Yeah, especially if you're out there and you're about to die and you're Ray Liotta.
Ray Liotta, are you about to die?
Please subscribe at the Ray Liotta private select level on our Patreon. It's $2,000 an episode, and it's only for you, Ray Liotta. It's not for anyone else.
If you're dying, please get on that before you die, because we'd hate to see that happen.
And if you're listening and you're thinking, oh, I could pledge at the one available slot for Ray Liotta, no, you can't. Don't do it.
Don't. Come on now.
Not even if you're close to Ray Liotta. I don't want to see any Joe Mantegnas or like, I don't know, Danny Aiello's or any of you other Italian character actors pledging at the Ray Liotta level. Okay?
Don't you do it.
Yeah. Wait, I think Joe Mantegna's dead, too. But still, don't pledge.
If you were alive.
And you're Joe Mantegna, who you'd remember as Fat Tony from The Simpsons, then we want you, Joe Mantegna, at the $1,000 level.
Yeah.
John, you got anything else?
I do not.
Then thanks so much for listening. I'm Eli Ensley's Bagano, and I love Death Sticks.